A word of caution. This episode contains depictions of sexual violence and murder that may be disturbing and triggering to some listeners. Please take care when listening. Since 2017, the DNA Doe Project has worked on more than 200 cases of unidentified remains. With the work of their leadership, countless volunteers, advances in technology, the organization was able to make some of the very first identifications through investigative genetic genealogy. They've been able to identify people with dementia who went missing and died in another state, away from family members. They've identified victims of serial killers, people who were murdered but had no name for many years. While some killers worked hard to conceal the identities of their victims, the DNA Doe Project has been able to put all the missing pieces together for successful matches. But this method of matching unidentified remains to their names has not gone without controversy. In 2019 and 2021, the DNA Doe Project came under fire for using the tools within GEDmatch.com to view matches to DNA profiles of Jane and John Doe's, whose cases they were working on, even though there was a problem with the software that put users' privacy at risk. DNA Doe Project founder Margaret Press said in a statement that their organization provided information for people whose DNA profiles were marked opt-out for law enforcement searching. This was due to a bug in the software the organization was working, and they failed to report the glitch at the time. There is much to love about North and South Carolina, but the two states have also had their fair share of violent and senseless crimes over the years. From murders on the Blue Ridge Parkway, in the heart of big cities or sleepy college towns, and along the coastal waters, some of these stories may be new to you. Some may have happened in your town. Some may involve people that are still missing to this day. But all will leave you remembering to always be vigilant about the people you meet and the places you go. I'm Renee Robertson. Please join me for Missing in the Carolinas. Episode 90. DNA Doe Project Stories from the Southern States. In episode 27 of this podcast, Unidentified People in the Carolinas, I gave a little background on the nonprofit DNA Doe Project. It was founded in 2017 with the mission of identifying John and Jane Doe's using genetic genealogy. A woman named Margaret Press, who I mentioned in the introduction, holds a degree in linguistics and a doctorate in Native American languages and child language development from UCLA. She co-founded the DNA Doe Project with forensic genealogist Dr. Colleen Fitzpatrick. It is an all-volunteer organization with more than 60 experienced genetic genealogists who devote their time and passion to the cause. They also help raise funds necessary to cover the expensive lab costs involved in extracting and sequencing DNA from remains whenever an agency is unable to afford them. The DNA Doe Project uses GEDmatch, a free genetic genealogy service that is not affiliated with any of the direct-to-consumer DNA testing companies, but which accepts data from all of them. For example, it allows users who have tested with Ancestry to compare their results to someone who has tested with 23andMe. There are also many analysis tools on GEDmatch that are not found elsewhere. The DNA Doe Project accepts suggested cases from the public, and you can contact them through their website, dnadoeproject.org. Because I've seen a lot of updates in the past year with unidentified people, I thought it would be interesting to take a look at some of these cases in the southern states, since that's where a lot of our listeners live. There are two cases I wanted to mention from Florida. One has been solved, and the other has not. On September 15, 1994, the skeletal remains of a Caucasian woman were located off Interstate 10 in Holt, Florida. She was estimated to have been between 36 and 45 years old and weighed approximately 110 pounds. She had brown hair that had been bleached. The woman wore a floral jacket with sequins on the upper shoulder cuffs and collar and a floral dress with buttons up the front. She wore inexpensive jewelry, a heart-shaped silver ring, a black cord bracelet with multicolored beads, a charm bracelet with no charms, and a cord necklace with a triangle, square, and two circle pendants. Her cause of death was determined to be foul play. Investigators suspected she was the victim of a serial killer who was apprehended in 1995. Keith Jesperson, a long-haul trucker who has been called the Happy Face Killer because he sent letters to the media confessing the nature of his crimes that included an illustrated smiley face, indicated he had murdered 8 women in Oregon, Washington, California, Wyoming, and Florida. Jesperson was arrested in March of 1995 for the rape and strangulation of Julie Ann Winningham of Camas, Washington. But while awaiting trial, Jesperson began writing confessional letters sharing details of other women he had murdered. One of the women he'd met near Tampa, Florida, and he said she called herself Susan or Suzette. Jesperson explained he had picked the woman up at a truck stop before raping, murdering, and leaving her body in the woods off the interstate. Because of this, investigators called the unidentified woman found in Florida Suzanne Jane Doe. They believed they knew how she died and who killed her, but her true identity remained a mystery until last year. When Suzanne Jane Doe was found, law enforcement requested a clay reconstruction of her face made, and they distributed it to the media, but this produced no leads. In 2007, a new facial reconstruction was created for the woman, but again, the effort led to no further tips about her identity. In 2008, the medical examiner's office sent anthropological analysis to the University of West Florida and to the FBI for DNA analysis and entry into the missing persons DNA database. According to an article that ran in the Tallahassee Democrat, a physician with the medical examiner's office heard about identifying remains through genealogy while at a medical conference. Suzanne Jane Doe's remains were sent to Othram, Inc., a company that specializes in forensic genetic genealogy, to resolve unsolved murders, disappearances, and identification of John and Jane Doe's. 6 weeks later, Suzanne Jane Doe was identified as 34-year-old Suzanne Kellenberg. She'd been out of touch with her family at the time of her murder, and they had no idea what had happened to her. Jesperson is serving 3 consecutive life sentences at the Oregon State Penitentiary in Salem. In September 2009, he was indicted in Riverside County, California, on murder charges. He was extradited in December 2009. He was convicted of another murder and received a 4th life sentence in January 2010. In September 1988, a man searching for cypress wood in rural Claremont, Florida, near Orlando, discovered human remains. Investigators said because the woman had been dragged from the road about 30 feet into the woods indicated someone was trying to conceal the body and indicated a homicide. The woman, who could have been at that location anywhere from a few days to a few weeks, was 24 to 33 years of age, had strawberry blonde hair with brown roots, whale manicured nails, and signs of a nose job and breast implants. She was wearing an acid-washed denim skirt and a blue and green tank top. Police with the Orange County Sheriff's Office consulted with a forensic sketch artist to get a rendering of the victim they ultimately called Julie Doe. No one came forward with any information. Her DNA was submitted to a National Missing and Unidentified Persons database, but then the case went cold. In 2010, new samples from Julie Doe's case were sent to a university lab in Florida. In 2015, the medical examiner's office received a report that revealed Julie Doe could have actually been born a male based on chromosomes discovered. Isotope analysis also revealed the victim spent most of her life in Polk and Monroe counties in Florida. They've now partnered with the DNA Doe Project in the hopes they can find people related to her. Julie Doe likely lived in South Florida and had XY genotype, but appears to have had gender reassignment surgery. Her breast implants were manufactured prior to 1985. She had multiple past fractures, including those on her cheek, nose, and ribs. She may be related to the surnames Anaya, Thornton, Robinson, and Hurt. If you are interested in submitting a GEDmatch kit for comparison, or if you recognize the composite of Julie Doe found on their website, email case-tips@dnadoeproject.org. Next, I'd like to talk about a few cases from the state of Georgia. On June 20, 2003, human skeletal remains were found in a storm basin near Highway 29 in Lawrenceville, Georgia, when city workers opened a manhole to clean out the storm drains in the area. A homemade pipe commonly used to smoke crack cocaine was found near the remains. The unidentified white male was estimated to be between 45 and 55 years of age and stood between 5 feet 7 and 5 feet 9 inches tall. He was believed to have died between 2002 and 2003. He was wearing a short-sleeved cotton Christopher Hawes shirt, white or beige, with a blue plaid pattern and athletic socks. The Gwinnett County Medical Examiner's Office and the DNA Doe Project partnered to use DNA and genealogy to finally give the man his name back. He was identified as Gordon D. Rexrode and was originally from West Virginia. Rexrode had been estranged from his family for many years and was 70 or 71 at the time of his death. He also lived in Alabama and Georgia before he disappeared from public records in 2002. Due to the use of genetic genealogy in this case, the DNA Doe Project leaders said they were quickly able to narrow down their search for the man's relative to a specific county in West Virginia. As an interesting footnote to this story, when I searched the name Gordon Rexrode in the newspapers.com database, I found him in a photo that ran in the January 5, 1994 issue of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. The photo cutline read, "Warmth in numbers." As temperatures dipped Tuesday and folks bundled up, Hugh Bruton, right, and friends from left, H.A. Doss, Egbert Moore, and Gordon Rexrode stayed warm by keeping the fire going at Bruton's produce stand at Church and Main Streets in Lilburn. Bruton sells boiled peanuts, firewood, and some fruit. You could barely make out Rexrode because he was in the process of pulling a baseball cap down over his face. He was wearing a hooded sweatshirt and blue jeans. This picture helped paint a further image of a man who most likely lived a transient lifestyle, huddled around a fire with acquaintances about his age on a cold January day, almost 10 years before he died alone of a possible drug overdose. Another recent case from Gwinnett County had ties to South Carolina. On April 11, 2021, a police officer responded to a report of trash dumping in a wooded area off Hamilton Road in Buford, Georgia. There, he found what appeared to be a human skull in a tent that had been constructed, but there was no other sign of bones or human remains after a thorough search of the area. All investigators could tell from the skull was that it possibly belonged to an 18 to 30-year-old woman and could have been in the woods for up to 2 years. In March 2020, Melanie Holloman from Charlotte had reported her 32-year-old daughter Brittany Davis missing. She had grown concerned after receiving multiple texts and calls from her daughter's phone while never actually speaking to her. Her daughter had also posted on Facebook that she was on a vacation in Puerto Rico. While her family knew she had gone there before with her fiancé, Michael Wilkerson, they hadn't heard of any plans for this particular trip. One of the texts that came from Davis's phone said she had broken up with Wilkerson and gone to Puerto Rico to clear her head. After a few days, she sent another text that she would be home the next day and included an image of a boarding pass. Then, nothing. When Holloman tried to report her daughter Brittany missing in South Carolina, she was told she would have to contact authorities in Puerto Rico. In August of 2021, genetic testing on the skull found in Georgia was confirmed to belong to Brittany Davis. Her father, Curtis Hill, was notified with the news. She had never gone to Puerto Rico. Her fiancé, 42-year-old Michael Wilkerson from Greenville, South Carolina, was arrested and charged with her murder. An article that ran in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution in October of 2021 reported that Brittany Davis had met her fiancé when he hired her for a food service job in Washington, D.C. in 2015. At the time, Wilkerson had been a married father of three. He eventually separated from his wife and began dating Davis in 2017. The two got engaged in early 2019 and had been living together in Greenville. Davis's mom told the newspaper that she hadn't seen any warning signs with her daughter's fiancé, but Curtis Hill, Davis's father, said he had felt uneasy around the man. Police believe Brittany Davis was murdered around February 12, 2020. Prosecutors said her fiancé bought lighter fluid, a suitcase, trash bags, and drain cleaner the day his fiancé went missing. The next day, he attempted to reconcile with his estranged wife. As of February 2022, a circuit court judge has denied bond for Michael Wilkerson as he awaits trial. There are two cases I want to mention from Louisiana. On December 30, 2018, a member of a search team looking for a missing boy in the Ville Platte, Louisiana area came across human remains in the form of a skull in an open shed out in a pasture. While the skull did not belong to the missing child, who was later found alive, further examination determined more remains that belonged to an African-American female with mixed Cajun-French ancestry. She was estimated to be 25 to 35 years of age. Investigators believe she had been buried for up to 10 years. They called her the Evangeline Parish Jane Doe. In May of 2019, the Louisiana State Police, who had also collaborated with the Louisiana State University FACES Lab, reached out to the DNA Doe Project to request assistance in the case. With the use of genetic genealogy research, the organization was able to identify Evangeline Parish Jane Doe as Erica Nicole Hunt. She had been 20 years old when she went missing on July 3, 2016. A single DNA Doe Project volunteer spent more than 49 hours researching this particular case. Hunt's mother, Shannon Isaac, told local news media that her daughter seemed to have vanished into thin air, leaving behind her 3-year-old daughter, Bree. It was unlike her to cease all contact with her family. The case has been ruled a homicide. Anyone with information is asked to contact the St. Landry Crime Stoppers at 337-948-8477 or by visiting stlandrycrimestoppers.com. On July 29, 2016, the St. Tammany Parish Sheriff's Office was notified that a body had been discovered on Highway 90 at Highway 433 north of New Orleans. An autopsy determined the body, which had been found badly decomposed, was that of an adult male, approximately 5 feet 10 inches tall and 65 or older. The cause of death was blunt force trauma to the head and classified as a homicide. The autopsy also showed a scar on the victim's chest that was likely the result of open heart bypass surgery. Another disturbing fact was that his arms were missing, and those, along with one of his legs just below the knee, were never recovered. Investigators theorized the limbs had been cut off to hide tattoos or distinguishable scars. Evidence recovered at the scene where the body was located indicated the victim may have had ties to the Mississippi Gulf Coast. In 2016, the Sheriff's Office sent samples of the victim's DNA to Parabon Nano Labs, a company specializing in DNA phenotyping. A sketch was then developed showing the man as a white male with fair skin, brown or hazel eyes, and dark brown hair. 3 years after the St. Tammany Parish John Doe was discovered, investigators in Biloxi, Mississippi were conducting a death investigation and discovered a human foot in a bucket at the residence of a man named Philip Pointer. Pointer appeared to have died of natural causes. DNA connected that foot to the New Orleans John Doe. Volunteers with the DNA Doe Project, using the DNA profile created from the victim, searched through genealogy websites to see if they could find the John Doe's relatives. They were able to locate one relative living in the northern part of the county. After the relative provided a DNA sample to the St. Tammany Parish Sheriff's Office, they were able to positively identify the man as 72-year-old Clinanthus Constantinitis. Philip Pointer remains the primary suspect in the death of this man, but because he also passed away, little else is known about the murder. Before we continue, let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. Are you looking to level up your writing or learn a new skill? Whether you focus on nonfiction or are more inclined to creative writing or want to learn how to put together a digital portfolio of your writing, WOW Women on Writing can help. Interested in podcasting? Check out a digital course I created called You Can Start a Podcast. During this pre-recorded webinar, you will learn the benefits of creating your own podcast, materials you need to get started, how to develop content that will keep listeners coming back for more, and ways your podcast can create supplemental income. I'll share examples of different types of podcasts, how to decide on a format, ways to handle the technology necessary for creating a podcast, how to develop your first few episodes, promotion and monetization ideas, ways you can repurpose your podcast content. All written materials and resources are provided by me. I'll also provide a handout with information discussed in the webinar, along with suggestions for a few different types of podcasts to explore. Best of all, this webinar only costs $30. You can find it by going to wow-womenonwriting.com and clicking on the Classroom tab. I'll also post a link in the show notes. I'm a huge fan of the skincare products by SkinXerin. You've heard me talk about them before. I use their pre-cleanse oil, hydrating beauty oil, and the perfecting night oil each day, and I swear my skin looks at least 10 years younger. I love that these products don't leave my skin feeling greasy and are loaded with squalene oil and vitamins E and A. Plus, they are extremely affordable, their customer service can't be beat, and the positive affirmations they include in the packaging are so uplifting. Go ahead and treat yourself with 10% off your order using my code MissingCarolinas10. I'll include a link in the show notes for you. And now, let's get back to the show. On the morning of August 11, 2003, a woman bicycling through Riverfront Park in Kingsport, Tennessee, noticed something unusual in the Holston River and called 911. Police found a body in an advanced state of decomposition along the shore of the river, later determined to be that of a white male. Drowning appeared to be the cause of death, and he had been in the water 7 to 10 days. He was about 6 feet tall and weighed 180 pounds. His age was estimated to be between 40 to 80 years. In his pocket, investigators found a BB&T bank envelope containing $267, but there was nothing else that could identify him. A forensic artist created a composite of him in 2018 and submitted it to NAMIS, a federal organization that provides technology, forensic services, and investigative support to resolve missing person and unidentified remains cases. The Kingsport Police Department reached out to the DNA Doe Project in October of 2018. They were about to attempt to obtain usable DNA for testing when Patty Williams Childress, a genealogist, social worker, and private investigator, saw a resemblance between a nameless missing persons report for Jerry David Hulbert and the unidentified person entry for the Kingsport John Doe on the same site. She reached out to the DNA Doe Project with her hunch, and they began building out a family tree for Hulbert. 64-year-old Jerry Hulbert had been suffering from dementia when he left his residence in Charleston, West Virginia on August 4, 2003. He had plans to visit a relative in Ohio and was headed towards the bus station. His family believes he mistakenly boarded the wrong bus and ended up in Tennessee. They don't know how he came to be in the Holston River, but his cause of death was listed as accidental. On October 9, 2001, a survey crew found a partial skeleton off the shoulder of the northbound lane of Interstate 65, about 12 miles north of the Kentucky-Tennessee state line north of Nashville. The woman was estimated to be between 25 to 35 years of age and was 5 feet 6 inches tall. She had long, wavy, reddish blonde hair. She had several missing or decaying teeth, and a healed fracture of the upper right arm near her shoulder and a healed broken rib. Her left breast had an outline of a rose tattoo. The medical examiner determined she may have had prior pregnancies and could have been pregnant at the time of her death. She was wearing a white or tan shirt, blue cotton shorts, and black sandals. On the ground near her body were two rings, one a gold band similar to a wedding ring. The other was a silver ring with a painted enamel blue background with flowers and leaves. Subsequent isotope analysis revealed the woman had spent time in the Great Lakes or New England region of the United States. In May 2018, the Kentucky State Police reached out to the DNA Doe Project for help with genetic genealogy. The closest DNA matches available in the databases were distant cousins, so volunteers had to trace the woman's family back to Germany in the mid-1800s to find ancestors. In July 2021, the Kentucky State Police received the name Dawn Claire Plonsky Wilkerson. She had been 45 years old at the time of her death and was from Nashville. While her body told a story of violence and the fact that she likely had children, I was unable to find any other information about Dawn Wilkerson or her death, which was listed as a homicide. And finally, there are four cases from Texas I wanted to mention. On May 21, 2002, construction workers collecting soil samples in an open field off Highway 135 in Gladewater, Texas, found a partial skeleton. The Tarrant County Medical Examiner's Office estimated the remains belonged to a white or Hispanic female around 16 to 30 years of age. There was no clothing reported found with the remains, and the cause of death was not listed. In 2013, investigators sent the woman's skull to be scanned for 3D reconstruction, discovering she had an unrepaired cleft palate. In 2020, a lieutenant with the local police department contacted the DNA Doe Project to explore using genetic genealogy to identify the Gregg County Jane Doe. They were able to develop a DNA profile using material from a molar and uploaded that to GEDmatch Pro, a database that allows law enforcement to compare the DNA profiles of John and Jane Doe's to those of people who have uploaded their profiles publicly at the GEDmatch database. After 2 years, volunteers were able to trace her direct maternal line to family on the border of Virginia and North Carolina. They learned the family of Pamela Darlene Young had a daughter that had a cleft palate and moved to Texas in the late 1990s. She had never been reported missing. The Gregg County Sheriff's Office said a person of interest had been identified, but died in 2017. They do not know how Young died or came to be left in the field in Gladewater. Anyone with information on the case is asked to call the Gregg County Crime Stoppers at 903-236-7867. For more than 30 years, investigators in the community in Jarrell, Texas, wondered who the young woman who'd been found on the site of Interstate Highway 35 at exit 277 was. She had been dead about 2 weeks when she was discovered on September 25, 1989, and was wearing a promotional t-shirt that said Cinco de Corona, which was shredded at the arms and hemline. She was wearing black knit pants, but no shoes. For jewelry, the young woman had a 16 to 18 inch necklace that had one white bead in the center of four gold-colored beads. Her right ear was pierced 3 times, and her left ear 2 times. She had straight brown hair and appeared to be in her late teens. She was about 5 feet 1 inch tall and weighed between 110 and 120 pounds and had an appendectomy scar. Investigators called her Corona Girl, and it appeared she had died as a result of gunshot wounds. While sketches for Corona Girl were created in the 1990s, they were revised in 2020 because, as a representative for the Williamson County Sheriff's Office explained, more studies involving facial morphology had been done, allowing for corrections to the individual features of the face on the original drawing. Several rounds of DNA testing in 2018 and 2019 produced genealogy records that led to family members of a young woman named Sue Ann Husky. Husky was the youngest of 7 children. At a press conference, her family encouraged members of the public to take ancestry DNA tests and opt in to help law enforcement solve cases such as their sister's. Her siblings said she was a typical 17-year-old when she went missing, a teen who enjoyed hanging out with friends, swimming in the lake, and playing with her nieces and nephews. Her family has no idea why she was in Jarrell, because she was from Northeast Texas in Sulphur Springs. Investigators do not appear to have a suspect in her murder. On October 29, 2006, 2 men target shooting on an oil lease off Highway 31 in Kilgore, Texas, discovered a young woman face down on a burning wood pile. There was a gas can located nearby. Based on the circumstances in which she was found, investigators ruled her death a homicide, even though they could not determine the exact cause of death. Due to semen found at the scene, they also surmised the young woman had been raped. She was between 17 to 25 years of age and stood about 5'3" to 5'5" tall. She weighed around 96 to 120 pounds. They called her Lavender Doe because she was wearing a lavender sweater along with a pair of one-tough jeans. She had $40 in her pocket, but no identification. She was buried in Longview's White Cemetery. The grave marker identified her as Jane Doe. The DNA Doe Project worked with the Gregg County Sheriff's Office in Longview, Texas. Volunteer genealogists helped narrow down her family as living in Jacksonville, Florida. She was eventually identified as Dana Lynn Dodd in August of 2019. Her sister told the Longview News Journal that their sister was 21 years old when she died. She had left Jacksonville with a boyfriend when she was a teenager, and he later died from a drug overdose in Ohio. Dodd's family had no idea they needed to be searching for her in Texas. In August 2018, a 41-year-old man named Joseph Wayne Burnett confessed to killing Lavender Doe before she was officially identified. He said he'd run into her at a Walmart supercenter in Longview, Texas, where she was selling magazine subscriptions and soliciting customers as they exited the store. He said she had gone by the name Ashley, and he convinced her to enter his vehicle so he could purchase a subscription. He later pleaded guilty to murdering Dana Dodd and his roommate, 28-year-old Felicia Pearson, on July 19, 2018. He was sentenced to 50 years in prison for each murder. The sentences will run concurrently, and he will become eligible for parole after serving 25 years. Dana Dodd's family made the decision to leave her buried at the Longview Cemetery in Texas and thanked the community for embracing their sister and taking care of her all those years. Another high-profile case involving DNA Doe Project was the Orange Socks case from Georgetown, Texas. On October 31, 1979, the body of a woman was discovered in a concrete culvert on Interstate 35. She was nude except for a pair of orange socks she was wearing and had been strangled to death. She was estimated to be between the ages of 15 and 30, stood 5 foot 8 to 5 foot 10, and weighed between 140 to 160 pounds. She had long brown hair. Henry Lee Lucas, who I've talked about here before in this podcast, falsely confessed to her murder in 1982 and was sentenced to death. He later recanted that confession, along with many others. Orange Socks was buried in a grave marked Unidentified Woman in Georgetown. In 2017, law enforcement worked to generate a new sketch of Orange Socks based off the results of DNA testing. A woman contacted the authorities and said the sketch looked like her sister, Deborah Jackson, who had lost contact with her family in 1977. She submitted her DNA to the DNA Doe Project, and the test results were a match. Her family looked at autopsy photos of the victim and recognized impetigo scars on her legs from a childhood infection and her unusually long toes and uniquely shaped earlobes. According to an article that ran in the Austin American-Statesman, Jackson had been 23 years old when she left Abilene, Texas. Her family thought she had run away, but had no idea she had been in danger. According to records the police found, Jackson had moved to Amarillo and worked at a Ramada Inn and an assisted living center in Azle, near Fort Worth. Investigators pulled Social Security records for Jackson and found no activity after 1979. Male DNA found underneath Jackson's fingernail clippings is still being investigated. Anyone with information on Deborah Jackson's murder is asked to call the Williamson County Sheriff's Office at 512-943-1300 or 512-864-8282. Here's something to consider as we conclude this episode. The idea of exploring family histories through genealogy or finding lost family members has led to many people submitting their DNA through various testing companies, but there are a few things you should consider before doing so. I found the following information on the law office website of Rakin Mercer in Maryland. First, know that your donor DNA may become part of a familial criminal search. When criminal investigators gather unknown DNA from a crime scene and have no available suspect, they generally submit that DNA evidence to a local and/or national criminal database to find a potential match. However, if no match is available, investigators may then perform a genealogical search to find family members with closely matching DNA. Company privacy policies may provide insufficient protection. A DNA ancestry company may promise to keep your personal contact information separate from the genetic information you provide. However, currently, there are few solid laws that can ensure your DNA data remains private after you have freely given it. You may have already given a DNA sample out for testing and now have concerns. Know that, in many cases, you may be able to cancel your consent to further use of your DNA. This brings us to the conclusion of this episode of Missing in the Carolinas. If you enjoyed this episode, please do me a favor and give it a 5-star rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, so please like our pages and get started on a discussion of the missing people profiled on the show. Do you know of a missing persons case in North or South Carolina that you think should be covered? email me at missinginthecarolinas@gmail.com with any details you can share. And don't forget to check out our sponsor, WOW Women on Writing, and the great programs and writing contests they have to support writers at wow-womenonwriting.com. Treat yourself to a skincare kit from SkinX Erin with my code MissingCarolinas10. Cover art for this podcast was designed by Macintosh Multimedia. Sound editing is provided by Daniel Robertson. Thanks so much for listening.